You know, imagine just standing on the street looking up at one of those gleaming billion-dollar commercial high-rises.
Like the ones in the King Abdullah Financial District, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you point to this specific window on, say, the 34th floor, and you know with absolute legal certainty that you own that exact square footage.
Right. And you bought it for the price of, well, basically a mid-tier dinner.
It is wild to think about. So welcome to this deep dive. Today, our mission is to unpack this massive structural shift that we're seeing in how capital is being deployed.
It really is a fundamental rewrite of the rules.
It is. We've got this fascinating stack of research on the Saudi Arabian real estate market, specifically looking at how the democratization of property through fractional ownership is just, you know, changing everything about the asset class.
Yeah, because for generations, real estate investing, especially commercial real estate, has been this walled garden.
Right. It always felt completely out of reach for most people. I mean,
Yeah.
historically, it's been associated with these massive upfront costs.
Oh, absolutely. It was reserved for institutional capital, sovereign wealth, or just ultra high net worth individuals.
Because they were the only ones who could stomach those massive capital lockups.
Exactly. And the heavy burden of directly managing the physical assets, the rest of the market was basically just left fighting over residential scraps.
Yeah, it's I was thinking about this earlier. It's basically like being forced to buy an entire bakery just because you want one slice of cake.
That is a great analogy, actually.
Right. And fractional ownership is finally just letting you buy the slice.
Right. And for you listening, why this really matters is that it's all about the democratization of the property market.
Breaking down the walls.
Exactly. Instead of one investor having to buy an entire apartment building or a commercial unit independently, that ownership is divided up into much smaller portions.
Which makes a huge difference.
It lowers the financial barrier to entry dramatically, and it allows a whole group to share in the income.
Which makes so much sense. But I want to pivot a bit, because now that we understand this basic concept of, you know, buying the slice of cake, we really need to explore why this shift is happening right now, specifically in Saudi Arabia.
Right, the timing isn't an accident.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
The context here is Vision 2030, right? The massive growth in the real estate sector.
Yeah, the Saudi investment market is changing so rapidly. Under Vision 2030, the kingdom is undergoing an economic restructuring that is almost unprecedented in modern history.
They're building entire new economic zones.
Exactly. Massive expansion of Riyadh's population capacity, huge commercial development to house all the regional corporate headquarters moving in.
So there's this huge supply of institutional quality real estate being
Yeah,
built.
and at the exact same time, you have this massive shift in investor behavior.
The non-investors just have completely different priorities now.
They really do. They refuse to tie up all their capital in one risky, illiquid asset. People are prioritizing four very specific things now.
Which the research laid out pretty clearly.
Right. First is diversification. Second is passive income. Third is long-term wealth building. And fourth, which is huge, is flexibility in capital allocation.
Okay, but let me play the skeptic here for a second. Because, I mean, hasn't the golden rule of real estate basically always been to own your specific plot of land?
That's the traditional kind of
Yeah.
visceral appeal of it. Yeah.
Right, so why would modern investors actively choose to share? If I'm sharing a cap table with 500 strangers, haven't I just surrendered all my control?
I mean, I hear that a lot, but that idea of sovereign control is largely a romanticized myth for anyone outside of the ultra wealthy.
Really? How so?
Well, maintaining sole control of a physical asset usually means you are taking on a massive operational liability. Tying up all that money in a single property is now viewed by newer investors as a major financial limitation.
Because it's a huge concentrated risk.
Exactly. If your entire net worth is tied up in one building, you are entirely dependent on that one specific neighborhood, that one local economy.
You're exposed to the vacancy risk of a single tenant.
Right. So shared ownership solves this because it allows investors to spread their exposure across multiple different property opportunities over time.
Okay, so I can put a little money in a commercial high rise in Riyadh and some in a logistics hub in Dammam.
Exactly. You might allocate another portion to luxury residential in Jeddah. You get the diversification that was previously impossible.
That actually makes perfect sense. So, since flexibility and diversification are the main goals here, I really want to get into the nuts and bolts.
The mechanics of it.
Yeah, because how does the actual structure of fractional ownership protect the investor from the traditional, you know, messy realities of being a
Right,
landlord?
the operational friction.
Because honestly, I'm just so relieved that this model doesn't involve me unclogging a tenant's toilet at 2 a.m.
Yeah, no one wants to be doing that.
No, it sounds awful. If a commercial HVAC system fails on a Tuesday in July in Riyadh, 500 fractional owners aren't jumping on a Zoom call to debate which contractor to hire.
All right. No, that would be an administrative catastrophe. The insulation from those operational nightmares is built into the legal plumbing of the investment.
So how do they insulate us from that?
Well, it's all handled by centralized professional management teams. When you buy a fractional share, the property is actually acquired by a special purpose vehicle, or an SPV.
Which is like a standalone legal entity.
Exactly. Usually a limited liability company created for the sole purpose of holding that specific asset.
And as an investor, I am buying shares in that SPV.
Precisely. You own equity in the corporate entity that holds the title. And that SPV contracts a centralized institutional property management firm.
So they deal with the tenants directly?
Everything. Lease negotiations, tenant relationships, communication, coordinating all the maintenance and repairs.
Wow. And what about the administrative side?
A separate asset manager oversees the SPV itself. They handle the reporting, the administration of distributions, ensuring legal compliance. The investor sits entirely outside of this operational loop.
Okay, so I am totally insulated from the operations, which is great. But the most important question is, how exactly does this generate a return for me? Like, how does the money actually hit my account?
Right, the yield. So the sources point to a dual return model. There are basically two ways you earn returns here.
Okay, what's the first one?
First is rental income distributions. So the SPV collects the gross rental income from the tenants. After taking out the operational expenses, the net operating income is distributed to investors based on their percentage of ownership.
So that's the passive income piece we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. You get regular dividend payouts from the rental yield.
And the second way?
The second half of the model is long-term property appreciation. The underlying asset just goes up in value over time.
Right. The building itself becomes more valuable. And in the kingdom right now, what's actually driving that appreciation?
There's a confluence of specific factors right now. You have the quality of the locations being developed, massive infrastructure growth, very strong tenant stability.
Right, because of all the multinational corporate headquarters moving in.
Exactly, which creates huge market demand. And it's all underpinned by Saudi Arabia's broader economic investment in urban expansion under Vision 2030.
Okay, so earning passive income without ever having to fix a leaky roof, it sounds honestly almost too good to be true.
Yeah, people say that a lot.
Right, so we really need to pivot to a reality check here.
Yeah.
Because obviously, accessibility does not equal a lack of investment risk.
Absolutely not. There is always risk.
So let me throw another common misconception at you. Because modern technology makes it so easy to just buy a fraction of a property on a sleek digital app, does that mean I can just flip it next month like a fast-moving tech stock?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. No, absolutely not.
Okay, so no day trading real estate.
That is the single most dangerous misconception an investor can bring to this space. Real estate is inherently a medium to long-term investment, and the digitization of the ownership structure does not change that.
Right, so the underlying asset is still concrete.
Exactly. Physical buildings move at the speed of concrete, not the speed of fiber optics. Patience is still completely required here, and the idea of short-term, rapid returns in real estate is basically a myth.
Because physical neighborhoods take years to mature, right?
Yes. Commercial leases are locked in for 5 to 10-year terms. The macroeconomic factors driving infrastructure value operate on decade-long horizons.
Okay, so if I'm locking my capital in for the medium to long term, I really need to know what I'm getting into. What kind of due diligence do I need to be doing before investing?
You have to evaluate two main categories. First is the property quality itself.
Like the location and the tenants.
Right. Location, historical occupancy trends, tenant demand in that specific area. You have to vet the actual building.
Makes sense. And the second category?
The structure itself. You have to understand how the ownership actually works on the platform. What are the fee structures? How do the distributions operate?
Right, because you don't want predatory management fees eating up your entire rental yield.
Exactly. And you need to know if those SPVs are truly bankruptcy remote.
Wait, bankruptcy remote meaning that if the tech platform itself runs out of funding and goes under, my equity in the building isn't seized during their liquidation.
Exactly that. Your investment must be legally firewalled from the operating company of the platform.
Okay. That is a massive distinction.
It is. And that brings up a really important point about transparency and regulation. investors can't be expected to audit these complex legal structures on their own.
Oh, absolutely. And the research mentioned that modern ownership structures and these new products are actually being tested within something called Rigier's Regulatory Sandbox.
Yes, the Real Estate General Authority.
Right. But a sandbox can kind of sound like a playground. How does a regulatory sandbox actually protect an investor from an unregulated fintech collapse?
Well, it essentially allows the regulators to oversee and stress test these innovative financial technologies in real time in a tightly controlled environment.
So they are actually mandating transparency and making sure the digital structures hold up legally.
Exactly. Rigier enforces stringent capitalization requirements. They mandate the exact legal structures of those SPVs we discussed. They require platforms to ring-fence investor funds in separate escrow accounts.
So they're forcing these platforms to prove that their smart contracts and dispute resolution mechanisms actually work under Saudi property law.
Right, before allowing them to scale to the broader retail market. It eliminates a lot of that Wild West risk, that regulatory arbitrage you sometimes see in early stage fintech.
Because you can't just move fast and break things when you're dealing with people's life savings and physical infrastructure.
Exactly. And the sources actually highlighted a specific platform as a prime example of this, Azul Gamma.
Yeah, I saw that. They're navigating this exact environment right now.
They are. Azul Gamma is specifically designed to support fractional property ownership by prioritizing that accessibility and transparency we were just talking about.
Right. Offering professionally managed opportunities that are fully compliant within those regulatory frameworks.
Exactly. They do the heavy lifting of sourcing the asset, structuring the SPV, and managing the compliance.
So the investor just focuses purely on portfolio allocation.
That's exactly how it works.
Okay, this has been an incredibly enlightening conversation. Just to quickly synthesize the journey for you listening, we've seen how fractional shares are basically tearing down the massive financial walls of traditional real estate.
Yeah, systematically dismantling that fortress.
Exactly. And it's offering this hands-off, diversified way to build long-term wealth through both rental income and property appreciation.
And the timing is perfect.
Right, perfectly synced up with Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030. Provided, of course, that you do your homework and practice patience.
Right. Don't treat it like a day trade. The barrier to entry has been lowered, but the standard for due diligence has not.
Right. Absolutely. Respect the fundamental illiquidity of the physical world. Well, before we wrap up, what's a final provocative thought we can leave the listener with? Something to mull over on their own.
Well, the financial implications are immense, obviously, but I think there is a really fascinating broader societal shift here.
What's the thread?
If the digital age allows us to seamlessly divide and share ownership of these massive physical buildings, how might this fractional mindset eventually change the way we view our personal relationship with the cities and communities we live in?
Oh, wow. So if a teacher, a nurse, and an engineer all hold fractional equity in the commercial centers and residential towers of their own city,
it completely alters the social fabric. For generations, people just felt like tenants in their own cities, looking up at buildings owned by faceless sovereign funds.
A total civic shift.
Exactly. When everyone has the mathematical potential to own a piece of the skyline they live under, we might see a profound shift in how communities view civic investment and their ultimate sense of belonging.
That is a brilliant thought to leave on. The technology doesn't just change our portfolios. It has the potential to change our relationship with the cities we inhabit. So, the next time you are walking through a rapidly expanding financial district, take a closer look at the skyline. The tools are finally here to claim your piece of it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We will see you next time.